March 31st, 2015, and this is Inside Out, The Naked Truth, coming to you live in more ways than one from Lupin Lodge in the Los Gatos Hills of California, where clothing is optional, by the way, but the truth is always naked. And I'm Errol Strider.
And I am Rochelle Alicia Strider. Welcome to our home at Lupin Lodge. We invited you over tonight for some conversation, a few laughs, several spiritual perspectives, and as many surprises as possible.
Our time tonight and on all our shows for over a year now has been gifted by our sponsor, Go Raw. 100% raw food that not only tastes good, but is really good for you. It's like the best of two worlds.
And Go Raw can be found at Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, and the organic section of Costco, where I just saw it this week. Go to goraw.com to find out where Go Raw can be found in your neighborhood and enjoy every bite.
Munch away.
Munch away. We're at the beginning of a very interesting weekend. A whole bunch of things are converging together.
And that's why we're celebrating tonight the coming up of Easter weekend and the beginning of Passover. And this week, Passover starts on Good Friday. Never was sure why they called it Good Friday,
but Neither did I.
But I guess they knew it was going to be good afterward.
It's
kind of a foreshadowing. Hey guys, it's not a bad Friday. This is a good Friday. You'll see. Just hang in there, wait a few days or a couple millennia, and you'll see why it's a good Friday. And then, of course, it's Passover. And there was Yeshua, the Jew, celebrating the Passover, which was the experience of the Jews being liberated out of Egypt and having been slaves for way too long. And Passover has to do, of course, with the angel of death, which was going to smite the firstborn child. And they painted their doors with blood, did they not? So that the angel would not
smite their kids.
Smite their kids, because they were not.
They only wanted the kids to be smitten by the bad people.
Yeah.
In that time were the Egyptians.
Well, they were certainly slaveholders. I rather suspect that not all Egyptians were bad people, but it is easy to generalize from this distance.
Yes, it's very easy to generalize. And there was a lot of smiting going on then. There was a smite here and a smite there and a smote and a smite and a smitten.
Uh-oh, we folks. Now, Rochelle caught the silly bug tonight.
Well, it's a fun word. I mean, it's not a fun
It is a good word, smite. I think if people use smite more, like in newspaper articles and police reviews, like, and then he got out of his car and he smite the officer. And the officer smite him back. Have we overdone this?
I think we've overdone it, yes.
Okay. So back to what's at hand. Whatever else Easter, resurrection, Passover, freedom, et cetera, represents and offers us, it's an opportunity to examine what's really one of the most profound questions that we ever raise, which is, well, Hamlet said it so well. To shop or not to shop? Wait a minute. I'm sorry. Was I mixing up my metaphors?
I think you were mixing up your
metaphors. I did. I get my metaphors all messed.
This planet is definitely a consumer planet.
Yeah.
I mean, even the third world countries, you know, that may not have as much to shop for, you know, they'd like to.
We live in the time where shopping is supreme. But back to this question that I want to raise. First of all, is it possible that something like that could happen and that some one person could come and resurrect? Now, what I find curious is why only one? I mean, it seemed like you'd like it to have one or two every generation to show people.
At least.
Yeah. It's like, hey, it's like someone waving from over here going, it's okay, you will pass through this experience. You are here to stay. You're a permanent, I won't say fixture in the universe, because fixture kind of implies being fixated. And that's, to me, the deliciousness of life is that it's in movement. I've had this insight for many years. If you ain't moving, you ain't happening.
Well, yeah. I think of the whole weekend that we're going to be experiencing as a vision of freedom. Because, at least in the Christian world, that Jesus came to free us in many ways from our false sense of self, to bring us to the reality of who we really are.
Say that again. That's really good. That's just like a whole other way of framing it. Say it again.
Came to free us from the false sense of ourselves and bring us to the reality of who we are.
Okay. Did you all hear that out there?
Well, Errol, nobody's going to say that to you right now, so let's not run away with this. Play with it, that's for sure.
Yeah, to be who you really are.
And to be a slave and then to be a free man is also who we really are.
Well, in that sense, the metaphor spirals around and comes back again from Moses and freeing the people and Yeshua freeing the individual. And I think that's one of the big and most significant aspects of the second go-around for reminding us of freedom, in that the individual in the time of Moses and times like that, people had a much more sense of a collective identity. You know, we live in a time where you can actually kind of go off and be by yourself. You know, that most likely was not the dominant thing in those cultures. People were grouped, they were bunched, and they had to be because tickets were really expensive.
They were bunched because you walked out, you see what that place was like? It was
what
desert.
Place?
It was a big desert. If you walked away, you might get lost.
That's right. So I see that the tradition and the symbolism of Moses is to let the people know that they are free. And I believe the symbolism and significance of the resurrection, if you will, of this phenomenon that has come down through history as Jesus Christ, but it symbolizes the liberation of the individual.
Well, you have nothing to fear, because if death is not a frightening experience, and that's what it seems to be all about, you know, then you have nothing to fear. And if you have nothing to fear, you are truly free, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, because what else are you free from?
Doesn't that make you kind of want your heart sing? And it's going to be a happy day. And I think what we're trying to get used to with this show and for the rest of the week is to really make it a happy day, whatever else it is, because you have really deepened, we have all together deepened our appreciation and experience of that very phenomenon. What a happy day.
when he walked.
When he walked. Taught me how to walk. But get this. Of course, that was the Edwin Hawkins singers singing, guess what?
Oh, what a happy day.
So whether you believe in, like, the resurrection, or whether you believe in any of that stuff, symbol, myth, history, none, whatever, to have that feeling that those people captured, however you get there, whatever you need to believe, what would cause an individual to be able to rise and expand out into the feeling that was expressed by those singers in that song, by that music?
For me, of course, it's to be in a state of love, which is a state of non-judgment, a state of non-resistance, a state of peace.
Always with the thing about the non-resistance. Every week, she comes in with the non-resistance. Tell us more about that, Rochelle.
I'm trying not to resist you.
See, she practices what she preaches. And believe you me, she needs to practice. Of course, I don't, of course.
Well, it's like I find joy when I'm not pushing off something, when I'm not creating this separation between you and me and or judging, you know, when I include you into my life. And I may not like what you do. And I may think it's like it doesn't seem to serve. It seems, you used words once, degenerative and generative.
Yes, generative and degenerative.
Right. So when something is generative, it furthers, it grows, it expands, it moves us. When something is degenerative, the opposite happens. Everything kind of gets smooshed up and it's tight and you have to be wary. And in any second, you can be smooshed.
Smooshed.
So you have to be very wary. And it's a very reptilian consciousness. To be killed or be eaten or eat or not eat and kill or be killed or whatever.
I have to say, let me just say this. It's a no-brainer for me. Go ahead.
Okay, it's a no-brainer. So
yeah, to be eaten or eat?
Yeah, yeah. You'd rather eat, that's for sure. But there's this sense that when I'm in this space and I look at everybody, you said something the other night which I really thought was beautiful. When you make God your significant other, everyone else becomes significant.
No, don't ruin my line. Please, okay. Do not ruin.
I'm just asking, it was a question mark at the end, whether that was the way it
goes. It's close, very close.
Go ahead.
Okay, the exact words are, when you make the person of God your significant other, every other person you meet becomes significant.
And I would say that's the state that this song seems to depict for me.
Wow.
When you're walking and you know that, it is a happy day. When you know that, whatever, if it takes a moment or a little longer, even if you have a fraction of a second of it, you know it. And it feels really, really good.
So whether you're a believer or a doubter or skeptic, whatever you may be, the fact that some people apparently have this kind of an experience. Now, the question I'd ask, coming from a narrow perspective that I do, my name is George Waffle, and I would like to know, you know, is it just some kind of hormones kicking in out of just the pure turbulence of the chaotic evolutionary ascendancy or descendancy, depending upon how you look at it?
Is that a question or a statement?
The jury's out on that, madam. Once we decide on that, then we'll know how to proceed. But it seems to me that there's a lot of cynicism in the world as I see it. A lot of folks are out there going, yeah, but, you know, it's like the mantra of the modern age. Yeah, but.
So well, that's why they have rabbits as a symbol of Easter.
And frogs. So they go, yeah, but. It's like, yeah, he was resurrected. Yeah, but, you know. Can you make any money? Yes, as a matter of fact, George, we could make a lot of money on this holiday. Every year we'll tie it into that spring goddess festival named after the Greek goddess Asteria. I don't know how to pronounce it. E-A-S-T-E-R-E. There was Greek goddess of spring.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Okay.
And Easter.
Yeah. Easter, E-A-S-T-R-E. And there were other definitions and attempts at trying to identify the origins. That was one of the main guys.
And all the little symbols, the bunnies and the eggs and everything, it's all about fertility, which is spring. It really doesn't have much to do with resurrection.
Well, it does in the sense that it's going to be a stretch, Rochelle.
I bet it is.
But if you think about how bunnies are made, or how humans are made, for that matter. And this is a time to encourage that. This is spring. This is when they want to get the...
Okay, I'm getting to the resurrection now. I got co-creation.
Yeah,
now.
The co-creation, and then that leads to the emergence. If you think like the resurrection is just, you know, one of many. You know, he's had like 12 before. Got 32 since he's been here on different levels and dimensions that you embody, and then you leave the body, and then you resume in the next body.
It's very interesting to me that these two religions, one grew out of the other, Judaism and Christianity. Like Judaism birthed Christianity in terms of Jesus being a Jew, and he never became a Christian.
Right. Little known.
You know, that came...
Some people are surprised that he was Jewish.
Right, and that came way after.
And you know, he was also left-handed. A lot of people don't know that. I'm sorry, go ahead. You were saying.
So the Last Supper was the Passover. And, you know, that is depicted all the time. And the bread is unleavened bread because that's what was celebrated at the Passover. That's what you ate at the Passover. And you ate wine and you had what is traditionally known in Judaism as a Seder, which depicts the exodus of Moses and the enslaved Jews leaving Egypt and moving across the Red Sea into the desert. Now, they spent 40 years in the desert, but not because it took that long to walk across the desert. The desert isn't that big. But they wanted the slave mentality to die out so that they went to the new land. Those who would go to the new land would have a free sense of themselves.
What if they were all, the reason they were waiting 40 years was they were lined up waiting for tickets, waiting for the place to open.
Only a very crazy mind might think that.
No, think about it. They were all waiting. They all got there early. You know how people go to concerts and they get there like at 3 in the morning? These people got there like 40 years early.
I discovered that at one time, and I found that very interesting, that we don't have to wait 40 years for a slave mentality to die out. And what is a slave mentality? And to me, that's what Jesus means to me. He means freedom from an enslaved mind. And yet, most Christians that I encounter have a very enslaved mind because they're stuck in a book, and this is the way it is, and it's not like that. It doesn't even exist. And to me, that's an enslaved mind.
This is Rochelle's personal perspective about what Christians have.
I didn't say all Christians, but most Christians who are stuck and can't see beyond a certain dogma are enslaved, and that's what it is when you say this is the only way it is and it can't be any other way.
Well, you're talking about separation. That's what we're talking about, perpetuating separation.
I'm talking about an enslaved mind.
Well,
they
go together.
Which perpetuates separation. I'm going to speak of it that way because it's Passover.
Think about it the other way because it's...
because it's not Passover?
I would like to take you back to the night. We laugh here because, well, we need to laugh. And hopefully you're laughing with us. In our time together, I'm always looking for the humor. But there was the serious side here of this person alone on this hilltop, Gethsemane, considering what his choices were. So I'd like to take you on a little journey, which is going to start with this song, and then I'll come in.
Could you ask as much from any other man. But you, I'd die, see the saga through, and do the things you asked of me. Let them hate me, hit me, hurt me, nail me to the tree. Would the things I said and done matter anymore?
Jesus sat alone on a hill, staring down into a deep cup that opened into centuries, millenniums into the past, from which he could see countless men placating for permission to be. And in the future, men trying to deny the cup. And Jesus looked down, a hard, distant look, with meditative stare and anguished heart. He sought to disentangle the various conceptions of life and whom it is to be lived for. Man, myself, or God? Is this cup mine, and must I drink it dry? In parentheses, life's fullness. And will you watch and wait as I drink this cup? And yet the human Jesus anguished for over 30 years, wearing the bane of humanity, seeking someone to sit with him outside aloneness. But all, except the marching, tramping enemy, confusion, coming toward him, seeking to surround and contain his need, yet providing the soil with their destruction, unconscious though they may be, they were preparing the way for new life. Shall I drink this cup? As he gazed into his fingers and palms, like a wrestler in the ring, twisted muscles, sweat, agonizing over decisions, torn in two by two minds, two ways. He raised the cup and thought, maybe, just perhaps, there might be another way. And yet, he knew inside himself, how could there be another way when I am the way? To that mind issue, change my mind. That, of course, was from Jesus Christ Superstar, and it was Christ wrestling with that decision. So let's assume for just a moment that that part of the story is true. There was this guy on this place who had the power, I believe that, to make it be any way he wanted it.
There are so many people who have been sainted or not sainted because nobody knew what they did or they weren't of the saint religion.
The saint family.
who believed so much in something, who were so attuned to themselves and that which they believed in so dearly, and they went to death, knowing they were going to their death, and with the sense of, like, I don't die for nothing, I die for something. And that's what I get from that. I don't die for nothing, I die for something. Though this is the cup is my death has meaning. And the meaning will affect people for millenniums, which it, of course it has. And the sense that we haven't even begun to enter the stage where we become that we become those freed human beings.
We've begun. I disagree. We have begun. We haven't not begun. We're just beginning.
Okay.
Thank you.
We're beginning.
Be nice to these very tiny beginning.
Yeah,
I know, but be nice to them. We're like little babies. Go ahead.
Yes. So to become that, when he says, greater something will you do than I.
Yeah, greater works you will do than I.
Right, and I'm just beginning to understand that.
Yeah.
And it's not because I individually would do greater works, but it will be collective.
Exactly.
And that collective thing makes it greater.
Right, it's greater because there can be a bunch of us doing it together.
That's right.
Because how can it not be greater?
And that's why I say it hasn't really begun. Because there are individuals everywhere that are starting to wake up to that sense of what it means to be at one, to be in the at-one-ment, to be lovers, to be the lover that he was. But we haven't begun to do it collectively.
Yeah, so this is my question. I just attended a weekend workshop, of which I led a good portion of it. While I was there, I kept wondering about it, and it was about a spiritual point of view and the language of that point of view, and I just was not comfortable with that. And then I look at that, and I ask myself, what's that about? And I realized that part of my journey at this point is I can't relate to those kind of word symbols. I guess that's why I'm a poet. I'm always looking for new appellations for that which can't be spoken. If they say that right up front, you know, you can't say the name of, you know, they have no, like,
name for
vowels
God.
In Hebrew except those little markings underneath
right,
the letters.
Right. To me, the conjoining of Christianity and Judaism is a huge evolutionary development because it has been separated for so long with the frightening denouncement that the Jews who spawned Jesus killed him. And that was the whole thing. And therefore, they were meant to live on the earth as vermin. And I'm reading a book that takes place in the 12th century, actually 13th century. It's 1206. And the way Jews were looked at in England was so frightening. And I remember when I was growing up, I remember being 4 years old and playing on the street. And these kids who went to Catholic school came and asked me what I was. And I said, a little girl, you know, because I thought it was pretty obvious. I mean, why were they asking me such? No, are you a Christian? Are you Catholic? Actually, they didn't use the word Christian. Are you Catholic? And I said, I didn't know. So I came home and I asked my mother, and she said that we were Jewish. And so the next time the little boys came by and they asked me, do you know now who you are? And I said, yes, I'm Jewish. And I was so nice to have a name for myself or something. And they told me I killed Jesus. And I just started to cry because I had never killed anything in my life. I don't think at that point I even killed bugs. And I cried and I said, I did not kill him and I don't even know who he is. And why are you telling me I killed somebody and I don't know him and blah, blah. This was 1945. And I'm sure anti-Semitism exists to this day just as virulently as it has in the past because we don't realize who we are. We haven't gotten what Jesus told us that we had to get.
But you gave me an idea. I don't want to leave it, but I want to come back to this. But earlier when you were speaking, I had this idea that the Jews and the Christians that can get together, like buddies, like let's be buddies, they're pals, they're mm-hmm. walking down the street together, hanging out, playing mm-hmm. golf together, you know, talking theology without, you know, resistance to each other, enjoying the unique distinctions between each other. And they put their arms around the shoulders and they go over to the Muslims
mm-hmm.
and make buddies out of them. We have the common ancestor.
Abraham.
My conviction is what hits the press, what hits the headlines are the most jarring aspects of life, because that's what gets the news. If you read endless articles about the grass grew today just about 2 millimeters over in this stem.
But it's like good news is wonderful things that people do. People magazine talks about wonderful things that people do, you know, that these great things, and people buy it. They like it. It's sentimental. It's fun and beautiful. But I remember when I was living in Israel, they told me they had started a newspaper about all good, wonderful things, and it didn't last.
No.
It died.
and it was the good news paper. And that's interesting if you think of what Yeshua came to bring forth was good news. Hey, listen up. I got some great news. Yeah, hey, come on. Yeah, no, just take a minute. Yeah, come on. They all gather around. This is him, you know, giving his.
I got that.
Yeah. Okay, y'all gather around here, okay, because I got some good news for you. You're going to love this. I'm so excited about this good news. I don't know what human accent I should even use, so I'm just going to use this one. You know, I don't even know what it is, but it's what the guy who's talking uses. Here's the good news. When you are tempted to consider your life as dark or futile or meaningless or too much, or the suffering gets too intense, or the confusion or the apathy, or and it just starts losing its yucca. What do they call that in Zen Buddhism? They talked about our son, the Dzogchen or something.
Yeah. Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah. It's like the core of your being.
Yeah. Whoop. And it wants to erupt. And that's what resurrection is all about. It's the possibility of coming forth again, reborn into a new sense of yourself. That, and the biggest distinction, this is the thing we have to let go, we go through the baptism for, the biggest distinction between the old and the new was the old self identified itself by limitation. In other words, often is not what it wasn't. As what it was, is how it knew what it was. And in the new self, I don't have to be in opposition to anything to know who I am. It's like he's opened this door. You don't have to labor under that delusion that you have to keep setting limits and reinforcing the limits, which leads to greed and addiction and everything else, and pain and blah, 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 the woes of the world. And he says, come on through this door. But it is going to cost you. You cannot get through this door without paying the price. And he said, this is the price. Up till now, you've operated under certain assumptions that you've put your faith in. You have put your faith in to the degree that you've operated as if they were really what was. That's what it is to put your faith in something. And what he's saying, but on this side over here, can't put your faith in that anymore. That's what you have to let go of. And that includes all your beliefs, your assumptions, who you think you are. You got to just leave it all behind and let a benign universe inform you of who you really are. And I, says Yeshua, am here to show you what that benign universe would look like in a human form, just like you. Come on aboard.
Mm.
This is good news. But you could sit outside the door and say, not so good,
My awareness of false idols growing up with you.
You have almost like a Brooklyn rash that breaks out on you when you get near a false idol. I've seen you.
So the depiction of an image, of any image that says this is God or even the Son of God or anything else, strikes me as being limited. I'm not going to say wrong. I'm saying limited in the sense that when we're little children and we look up at mommy and daddy, they look like these great big people, you know, who are going to take care of us forever and we can depend on them all the time. And part of our maturity is that we become the mother and father. We become the parent. We realize that they are not going to take care of us. We move to the greater, the mystery, the unknown, and realize that we can move into a partnership with that which we cannot identify and cannot control. And in that place, we get our freedom. And so if this weekend, for me, is a celebration of being free, that is how I choose to be free.
Nicole Sponberg's version of Resurrection. And we are Inside Out, The Laughing Heart. It's March 31st, 2015, and you are here with us. And we're looking at this weekend, Passover, Pesach, Easter, and the whole meaning or possible significance of that phenomenon that we call Jesus, Yeshua. But what I got, the insight that I got as I was listening to that, because I saw him as like the guy with the keys, like that expanded way of beinghood is like behind like the Berlin Wall or something, you know, and he's got the key, and he walks up and says, come on, let you in. And he says, and the key that unlocks the gate is wholeness, unity, meaning he achieved unity of being, I believe, achieved a unity of being. In other words, all aspects of his personality were unified and moving along the same intention, i.e. the will of God. His mind, his body, his spirit, so whatever aspects of them there were, he got them all lined up. Oh, that's what a whole being is like. And there are others. There's beautiful teachers all through the years.
Anywhere. Like Siddhartha.
And like all the ones right now who are like being that very person just in their day-to-day movements. Like that guy we met at Trader Joe's who died. I mean, he was just the sweetest, wonderful man. I could hardly wait to go shopping.
Well, the Nelson Mandelas of the world.
Yeah. But in order to get in, you have to be whole. That may seem a strain if you think of yourself as divided, and most of us are, but that's where the service he offered comes in for a very small price. He will go in and he will help bridge the gap through his spirit, because it kind of pervades you. And anywhere there's a gap where there's parts of you are broken, that literal energy of spirit will move into that space and provide a link. And so you get to be whole. And that's the gift someone who's achieved being whole could give anyone else. And why you will do even greater, because there'll be so many of you walking through this door of wholeness and turning around and inviting others, that are you kidding? The amount of love that you will have in those epochs, it defies anything you could comprehend.
I always feel that the greatest test for love is when you feel threatened by other. And you choose not to be threatened, and you choose to move into the at-one-ment with that which threatens you. You choose to embrace that which threatens you. To me, that is what you're talking about. Because, you know, there's a whole bunch of people get together, and, you know, they sing hymns, and they're happy, and they're just loving. And you walk into their space, and they smile at you. And yet, very often, I have experienced that people who smile at me with this, oh, we're all so happy because we're here and we're all together and everything. And I think that when it's real, nothing has to be said. You're just received. You feel yourself received just the way you are. You don't have to change. You don't have to be different. You don't have to adhere to a particular philosophy or a particular belief system. Just the way you are is totally loved. To me, that is the way we move from division to wholeness.
Let me recommend a book that so illustrates that. Taylor Caldwell's book, was it The Listener or The Man Who Listens?
God, I even forgot that book.
Yeah.
That's a long time ago.
I mean, The Listener is someone who, in this book, totally receives, has absolutely no judgment. Just, okay, oh, okay, that. And he persisted with that point of view all the way up to a very public, painful execution. Oh, okay. Okay, the cup, okay, I'll drink this one too.
And our immaturity, our reptilian brain, has a great deal of difficulty with that. Our reptilian brain is like, why didn't he fight? He could have done that. There's a whole bunch of people liked him a whole lot, you know, they would have helped.
Yeah. Yeah. Come on, help me out here, will you?
Get him off the
Romans
cross, you know.
They're coming with the spears and all that, come on.
There's so many holes in stories. Unless you decide that that story is going to make you whole.
Oh, did you hear that, folks? That was a first timer. There are so many holes in the story.
Right. There are so many holes in the stories. Unless you realize that that story is going to make you whole.
Well, there you have it. You heard it here. And that's what we're trying to get to, is a state of wholeness. I mean, think about it. It's not like it's a brainer. It's the other thing.
It's a no-brainer.
Yes. And that is...
How about a yes-brainer? Right. No one ever says a yes-brainer. They always say no-brainer.
That's true. Yes-brainer.
But the whole thing of a no-brainer is it's a positive thing.
Let me see if I could remember back to the no-brainer, yes-brainer concept I was about to think about. What a no-brainer is, that wholeness works. Wholeness, when you put things together and you find a way to make them fit, things get better, not just like adding, you know, it's like what do they call it, the geometrically expanding. Oy, and it gets, wholeness is really a good thing. You'd think we would be choosing wholeness all the time instead of pushing off someone else. It's okay, I understand. As we do, darling, they are immature beings. All they know is like pushing off, pushing off, pushing off. But there comes a time in the immature being when the universe says, it's time for your bar mitzvah.
Yeah, and we have, as everyone knows, because we've been talking about it for so long, we have a new grandchild.
And she's having her bar mitzvah next Wednesday.
Not really. But the fact that the coupling that takes place to create another being is a perfect physical example of what you're talking about.
Oh, say more about that. I'm starting to get really excited now.
I always think that on the physical level, we were created to understand the metaphysical level, that there are things that happen. You know, we come into union to create something new. Artists do that too. You know, they understand that sense of coming into union creates something new.
Yeah.
But physically, that's how we all get born.
Yes.
So to me, it says, like, this is a good thing.
Are you sure?
As far as I know.
Let me think.
Because of that, it's like, this is a good thing. You know, this is constantly creating something new. And let us rejoice about that. Let us rejoice about creativity. Let us rejoice in the sense that in our freedom, which means coming together, not staying apart, we create a new world. We create newness. We create excitement. We create deliciousness. We create love.
Let us rejoice, in short, orgasm. Think about it. Think about your orgasm and how, like, wow, that is. And it's like,
well, I always think that God gave us orgasms because he wouldn't do it otherwise.
Whatever. I don't care what the reason. You could have any reason. You could have a reason of, like, I wanted you guys to go out of the house on Friday nights, not bother me, go for whatever the reason.
Well, what I'm saying is it's enjoyable. This coupling, you know, when it reaches fulfillment, is enjoyable. It's enjoyable.
But then think of where our son and his spouse are right now. They have a new being that's just arrived into their hands, into their circumstances with them. And they have stepped up, as billions of parents do and have and will, to nurture and bring this along. Think of the incredible power. I mean, you're a mammal, weren't you? You're still, yeah, you're a mammal.
I still am.
Exactly. You're a female mammal. You know what it's like about, you know, pretend you're married.
I'm a woman, a woman, a man of the womb.
Wow. How'd you get there?
I have one. A womb. That makes me a womb man.
Oh, I'm getting it. I always was wondering how that worked. Tell me more about that, Rabbit.
Well, it's so interesting, you know, to realize we're the incubators for life, women. Life incubates within us. And that's a very special thing. As much as men would like to know about that, I just don't think you can unless you experience it. You can read about it, you can do anything, but the experience is so unbelievable that you got a life inside me. It is formatting.
Formatting, right.
As we speak.
Format or cancel. No, go ahead and format. That's great. And that reminds me, we always want to bring it back to this, and because this, to me, is the message of the crucifixion.
You know what they say? Some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle. And this'll help things turn out for the best. Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps, just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. And always look on the bright side of life. Come on! Always look on the right side of life.
Well, it's been an amazing time, as usual. I forgot your name.
Look it up.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Anyway, but I remember the name of our program and our sponsor, Go Raw.
Thank you, Go Raw, for allowing us to be here today. And looking forward to this weekend where with family and we can celebrate those our heritage.
All of them, and how they intertwine to bring us into greater consciousness.
Yes.
I think our consciousness has improved since 2,000, 4,000 years ago. I do. I think we're on the roll.
Okay. Remember, resistance is what you add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more.